There's a doctor in the house.
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
Is in.
Right then, it's time for Advanced Medicine 2018 style. Happy New Year, my friend, Dr. Batar. It is on. Welcome back.
It is, and Happy New Year to you and Super Don and Ben and everybody else as well.
Yeah, I don't know if you got that. I think I texted you a picture. We got a picture out at midnight. There was fireworks. They had still the tree up with the family, and we definitely stayed up late, but had a good time.
Yeah, actually, I think I got a text from you like at 2 in the morning or something, because I was surprised. I said, what are you doing up so late or something?
Yeah, and I made some lame excuse, of course, watching football or who knows what. But, I have to get back on the schedule because my son goes back to school for the last half of his senior year tomorrow. My daughter then the next day, and we've been enjoying sleeping in, at the times where we don't have to get up with the kids for their early schooling. So I'm thinking about, I got to get up early in the morning, but I'm still here. I tried to beg off of the show tonight. I almost fell asleep before the show, but I thought, man, Dr. Batar is coming on board. There's no way I'm sleeping through that.
I think that if we, I think Super Don and I did that one time. Remember, there was something that was going on, and you had to do something, and we were going to try to do the show ourselves, and I don't remember what it was. It was recently, about 6 months ago. Do you remember that, Super Don?
Did you guys have it covered, or what?
I don't remember. I think we just kind of, we were going to do our own thing, and I don't remember what happened. You made it in time or something, so it was like...
Yeah, and actually, that happened, if you recall, I think it may have even been as early as last week. Robert just completely dropped off, and we were going to start the show, and then came in at the last second. Yeah, so we'll have our day in the sun someday.
Yeah, you guys will do it. I just can't. I'm hovering. I'm like a hovering daddy. I can't let go of the baby. But
you're like a helicopter parent, right?
That's right. Actually, you know what? I tried to forget about it. Timing was great on the cable and all the internet going down over the holidays. It really was crapping out every which way but loose, and they finally, fixed some kind of amplifier in the wires outside on the, on the telephone poles, if they still call them that. And so today we're back online just in the nick of time. I thought I would have to use the backup version of connection like that time it crapped out. So we're back. 2018's looking up, and Dr. Batar, this is a great story. And weirdly enough, in the New York Times, they did a story earlier in the week on UFOs. They're starting to expose the truth about UFOs, limited hangout style. But I actually like this article better. It says, finding purpose for a good life, but also a healthy one. But I repeat myself, that I added at the end. I'm thinking that if you don't include health in a good life, it's not going to be good by definition, because you'll be miserable and pain symptoms, or you'll be on drugs. And either way, that's not the good life as I would define it.
I totally agree with you. I think that they're synonymous, because a good life is going to lead to a healthy one, and a healthy life is a good life. So I think they're one and the same. It's interesting that they've made this correlation, because a lot of people would not associate health with a good life or vice versa, but really they are synonymous, and they exponentially feed each other is really how it... Mm-hmm. You can't have a good life, by definition, you can't have a good life unless you have a healthy one. And by definition, if you have a healthy life, it has to be a good life, because look how many people don't have health. And this comes back to our original definition when we talked about, where people say disease and absence of disease, they're the two opposite ends of the spectrum, whereas in fact, that's not accurate at all. Disease is one end, absence of disease is the middle, health is on the other extreme. So the definition, when people say, I'm healthy, why do you say you're healthy? Because I don't have a disease. They're really just in the middle area, but they think health is not a health is an abstract concept. It's not a tangible concept to them, because the tangibility is associated with the disease. So absence of disease is considered health. Well, if you become healthy, then you're going to the opposite extreme, and that's where the good life actually begins. It's the same difference as like when a cancer patient, when you're talking to a cancer patient, they say, I want to live.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
so there's a difference between existing and living, right? Mm-hmm. And then I look at it also as thriving. So you've got existing on the same extreme as a disease, living in the same area as absence of disease, but thriving in the same area as a healthy life. So words have power. We've talked about this before, but I think to associate a measurement or however intangible that measurement may be, and understanding where we fall into this spectrum is important. And then having the goal to strive forward to having that healthy life, having that thriving life, and not just settling for absence of disease as living, and understanding that existing is not a healthy life, and existing is what people do when they're just trying to survive a disease process, a chronic disease process.
Yeah, every once in a while, Dr. Pitar, you know, if we get a quote-unquote acute ailment, like let's say we work ourselves to the ends of our energy centers and we're out of gas, so to speak, and we could collapse, or let's say we get flu-like symptoms, and it's not fun. It doesn't feel great. But at those times, we can remember how grateful we should be when we are feeling great, and also finding ways to duplicate and manifest and keep that and maintain it. And this article is interesting because I think it's written by a pediatric oncologist who sees a lot of real horrible things of children dying with cancer. And you talk about finding a purpose in life, meaning to your life, and thinking about wealth versus health. I don't mean to put them as an antagonistic, but we've reported on plenty of wealthy people. When we look at, if we were to look at their bank accounts, we'd go, well, yeah, that's wealthy. I don't know if that's the actual definition, but they had more money than you know what to do with. You could buy, you know, a million times cancer treatment over if you were going through the most expensive treatment in the world. Yet they're still in misery and they still end up dying with all the wealth. Exactly. So the question is, was that really what was the critically important part of their life? How can you enjoy it without the health? And yet go ahead.
This is the thing that you see with people that came into wealth at an early age. They become enamored with alcohol and with drugs, and they end up dying, you know, before they're 30 because they think that's what life is. Or people that end up having made wrong choices and they go into liver failure or kidney failure, and they've got $20 or $30 million in the bank. We've actually had patients like that have come. They've had all the money in the world, and they have made wrong choices. They've got permanent damage now, and they're just trying to survive. And so what's the point of having money if you don't have health? Because there's an old saying, I don't remember who said it, it was an anonymous saying, is when you have health, you have hope. When you have hope, you have everything. Mm-hmm. Notice there's no mention of wealth in there or money in there. So it's, you know, what's the definition of wealth? Wealth, to me, the definition of wealth is actually very different. Wealth is having sound health, having a sound mind, having appreciation, gratitude, having family around you—that's really wealth. Because you have a measurement of something that's very valuable. And so, really, when you think about wealth, wealth is associated with value. And so, to me, those things are valuable: family, friends, mm-hmm. people that you can count on. And never more than in the last few months has that become very vivid for me, very acute
sure.
for me. And
so well, I think love is a currency as well. You know, I was talking about abundance, right? Do you have abundant amounts of love in your life, right? Does that overflow, right? And we think about,
absolutely.
You know, what account do you check for that, right? There's something in the heart. Yeah. You feel it, right? You know it. And like you said, knowing who your friends are, the real family, the ones that stick with you and support you and love you no matter what. And to me, again, more valuable, as we talk about, than pieces of paper that can buy stuff. But even those that are saying, my gosh, we're the, you know, talking about America, we're the only industrialized nation that doesn't have guaranteed health care. I'm like, really? How do you define health care? It's like, well, we need to have more money so we can, you want to put money into something that isn't even what you think it is. Because as we've talked about, and this is what advanced medicine is about too, is teaching people what is real medicine versus, you know, how they've co-opted medicine into a system of disease creation and management, which is what people are begging to be part of, to have the money to cover, when it really, I don't know what they're at, if they know what they're asking for, if they really know what they're going to get if they get it.
Clearly don't, because why is it that if we don't have guaranteed health care, why is it that everybody, everywhere on the planet, seeks the United States as the definitive place to come get their health care? You know, why is the United States associated with the optimum and the premium level of health care, of options for treatment? It's because of the innovative, capitalistic nature of medicine in the United States. And even though, you know, when I say that, it's like, what are you talking about? How can you say that, we have innovative medicine in the United States? Well, compared to any other parts of the world, we are very innovative. And yet still, when you look at the real level of innovation in the United States, it's actually prevented. It's impeded on purpose.
It's stifled,
Exactly. And, you know, when you read this article, the one that we were just talking about in the New York Times, Finding a Purpose for a Good Life, but Also a Healthy One, the very first line where he says, my favorite medical diagnosis is failure to thrive. And that's very interesting because that's usually associated with children that are malnourished or, you know, something where the development is not where it should be. And so they call it failure to thrive. But really think about that. Take it out of the medical diagnosis standpoint and look at it. From a global perspective, failure to thrive really is cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is pathognomonic for the failure to thrive. Because when people that thrive can't get cancer, because if you're thriving, you know, you're all encompassed with life and you're involved and you're passionate and you're not holding back and there's no regrets and there's no anger and, you know, you're too busy going forward rather than looking backwards. Anger is a backward looking thing. You know, you're looking in the rearview mirror when you're angry because you're looking at something that happened in the past. When you have regrets, you're looking in the rearview mirror looking at the past. All these associated negative things, fear is based upon something that happened in the past, so you associate it with, you know, usually, yeah, you can have fear of things happening in the future, but you're not going to fear something in the future if you've never experienced that agony of whatever you're fearing, so you're never going to think about it in the future. But if you're looking forward to life, that's a different energy. I mean, in fact, even just me speaking right now, isn't it a different energy? So you can.
Oh, yeah. The anticipation versus the dread, right? There's
exactly.
Healthy. And I love the concept, again, of thriving. There's vitality in that word.
Yes.
Right? The vitality, the vital force is flowing. Spirit is flowing through you. There's not an impedance. There's not a blockage. And you said it right about American healthcare. It's fascinating. On one level, it's a disaster because there's a monopoly on, let's say, the management of disease through drugs. Yet, despite that, there's innovation in our blood in America that says, you know what, despite everything that the government tries to throw at us, we're going to keep out creating those that try to stifle our ability to do what we're here to do. And that is, I would say, an American ideal, but I know a lot of Americans have lost that, but we're going to do our level best to regain it. Advanced Medicine continues here with Dr. Rasha Bittar on the Robert Scott Bell Show next.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
And as we say, giving them a swift kick in the aspirin. Actually, I don't have to do it. Dr. Bittar, Karate Man, is here, and he can do it. So having a good time. Advanced Medicine kicking it off in 2018. And Dr. Bittar, I answered already four questions of the day, so I'm going to enlist you to answer five or six or seven more. Is that all right?
That sounds like a plan.
All right, here we go.
Excuse me. I'd like to ask you a few questions.
All right, this question comes from Hallie. Hallie says, my family and I have been plagued with various staph infections for the last 2 years. It began with my new baby who developed what looked like boils at the base of his skull when he was 2 days old. It went away with warm compresses. In turn, I got a breast abscess, which may or may not have been MRSA infected or doctors suspected but never tested. Over the last 2 years, it has been one after another with myself and my six-year-old. Usually small pus-filled bumps that appear near small wounds. But as far as impetigo for myself, another abscess in my armpit, and even a nickel rash that ended up looking like staph, even more than listed here. How can I get it out of our home and bodies? I've done a lot of research but can't find a lot of natural options besides essential oils and boosting immune health. I use mostly natural methods for healing, but did use antibiotics for the breast abscess and impetigo. Please help, Hallie. Hallie, real quick, homeopathically, heper, sulfur, calcarium. Heper, sulfur, always indicated for staph, whether it's MRSA, anything that's pus-like that comes to a head. Heper, sulfur, calcarium is the homeopathic remedy. And yes, you can use silver locally, systemically as well. And Dr. Bitar, I'm sure you've had a lot of patients over the years present with the various forms of staph or skin issues like this.
Well, everybody has staph and strep. It's you know, on our skins all the time. Everything is has staph on it, and actually strep too. But why does a person get it? Why does a person get an infection with it? And it's usually because there's a compromise of their immune system. So, you know, she's already said essential oils. You mentioned homeopathics, and then of course boosting immune health. Well, I would say you're right on the right track. But the issue is, how are you boosting immune health? Mm-hmm. So there's a compromise of the immune system somewhere. Obviously, it's not one that's devastating. Otherwise, there'd be other problems. But it's there's some type of a chronic load in your immune system. And so obviously, looking at heavy metals, persistent organic pollutants, the first and second toxicity in my seven toxicity philosophy. But really, you need to also look at the gut.
Yes.
And the gut always starts. So when I talk about the seven toxicities, all of them really we need to start at the gut. Hormonal issues and skin issues, always gut and liver. I mean, to me, it's the organs of detoxification. If your organs of detoxification are working right, you're not going to have skin issues. You're not going to have issues with things such as...
We'll lose you, Dr. Bitar. I just want to double down on what he said, because that was my history. I had so many skin rashes, skin conditions, skin infections, and I had just utterly destroyed my guts with antibiotics as a child. Prior to that, again, of course, the baby formula they put me on when the doctors told my mom that I shouldn't be on breast milk, and they put me on powdered formula, constipated me out not out the thing, because nothing was coming out the thing, you know. But healing the gut was critical, Dr. Bitar, in my own journey, and I relate that 100%, 110% to what you're saying. Because I had all those skin conditions until I healed my gut. Then wow, the skin cleared up miraculously. And I don't mean to miss the liver, because you mentioned it. And, of course, that gut-liver, that's why we get along so well, among many other reasons.
Well, the gut-liver connection, you know, and, of course, you can take this to add the kidneys to this, too. But the organs of detoxification, always the four major ones are, we've already talked about gut, liver, kidneys, and then skin, which is the largest organ detoxification. But it's interesting that skin will manifest. To me, skin is a manifestation of internal health. So if somebody has skin issues, they have internal health issues, and usually internal health issues that are directly related to the organs of detoxification. But hormones and skin issues, those are the two that are so intimately entwined with the gut. In fact, even brain, if you think about neurological deficits, they say the second brain is in the mesenteric plexus within the gastrointestinal system. So serotonin and dopamine and all these other neurotransmitters are also found within the mesenteric plexus within the gastrointestinal system. So, you know, again, we can start talking about some of these associations, but I believe that if somebody is having the type of problems that Hallie's looking at or experiencing, first thing they need to do is do a gut detox. They need to figure out what's their load on the immune system, look at heavy metals, persistent organic pollutants, and then go on with the essential oils and homeopathy to get the resolution.
Well said. And Hallie, if you're new to the show, Dr. Bitar has an excellent international best-selling book called The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. I'll hold it up and show everybody that are watching on YouTube so you can visually see it. And when we come back, we've got more questions and more answers. Go to advancedmedicine.com for even more there. And hundreds of hours of broadcast archive.
You're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott Bell Show. Making sense out of medical propaganda. Here's Robert.
All right, we got more questions to open up 2018 here, Advanced Medicine. Go to advancedmedicine.com. Still at Medical Rewind, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of archives of Dr. Bitar and I, and so occasionally some other guests. Sometimes Hillbilly Hank, a.k.a. Ty Bollinger, drops in to crash the party. Makes it even more absurd. But we somehow get along, all of us, and really have a good time. And Dr. Bitar, again, New Year's on. Let's keep empowering people. the way we have become empowered, if you will, to bring healing into our own lives, much less those who are ready to be healed. This question is coming from Stacy. She says, my husband has been diagnosed with Crohn's disease about 8 years ago. He's taken various meds for it. Started, is it Acicol or Acicol? You know how to pronounce that one?
Acicol.
It sounds like that fake medicine, no acetol, when you can't sit down because you've lost it, right? So after a few years on Acicol.
I didn't know that was a fake drug. I thought it was a real drug.
That was a real one? I must have taken it because I don't have one. I just sit down and it's gone. I fell right over. All right.
That's how much pharmacology I've forgotten.
That's all right. It's okay. The pharmacology is overrated. After a few years of that, switched to Lialda. I don't know that drug, Lialda. He really hasn't experienced many issues until just recently. In November, he started having blood in his stools again, so he had a scope done. They said he had two areas of active disease in his colon, so at one time in November, he was taking Lialda, prednisone, and Kinaza. Midway through this regimen, a friend came to us with your information, I guess talking about me, about the Silver Aloe Protocol. My husband stopped the Lialda and the Kinaza right away and tapered the prednisone sooner than the doctor had ordered to start your protocol, in order to start the protocol. He actually started the protocol before being off all the meds, so he's been on it for about 3 to 4 weeks with only 10 days of that being med-free. He's now back to having loose stools with blood several times a day as he was before his initial diagnosis 8 to 9 years ago. His diet before starting the protocol was terrible. He drank Mountain Dew like crazy, would eat fast food frequently, and it was easy to get when he's on the road trucking. He quit Mountain Dew and fast food completely and now is working on eating a healthier diet. He's wondering how long it might be before he sees improvement from those frequent bloody stools and what he should be eating. Stacy. So, Dr. Bitar, again, when we put people on a healthier protocol or when they make changes to a healthier protocol, it doesn't mean instant cessation of symptoms. In fact, the things that are being suppressed by the drugs might manifest again as you're working through the healing because it's a different direction, is it not?
Yes, absolutely. And of course, you're asking me that, like posing that as a question. You know that as well as me, because you are better than me, because you lived through this. So, you know, this is one of those components where I think the silver protocol that you have, Robert, I think it's a great protocol, but I don't think it works in all cases. But the key is obviously getting off the drugs and the steroids. And as you said, those symptoms are going to manifest. They're going to come back to life, if you will. If you think of it, it's going through a tunnel. You've gone through this tunnel of disease, and now you're on the other end. You're on these drugs, and you want to get better. Well, if you want to get better, you almost have to go back through that same tunnel that you came through. And the experience of the symptomology is a relatively common phenomenon, and you'll see actually symptoms getting worse before they get better. So that's part of it, but also making sure that you are on the right track. Now, the gut health, you have to have very good, very strong line of probiotics and prebiotics. The gut has to be detoxed. It has to be allowed. The overlying toxicities have to be reduced, at least. I don't think you need to. You'll never remove every toxicity from the body, but if you can reduce the burden, you have a significant a reduction in the load that the body is carrying, and so that allows resources to be shunted towards the optimum healing process, or at least healing process that which eventually will become optimum the further you reduce the burden that you're carrying. So think of it this way. There are two components. Just like the CDC has the infectious disease team that goes out there that everybody talks about, and then the toxicology team that also goes out, but people don't really talk about it. Similarly, in the body, you have two components that lead to disease. You have either one, toxicity, which is a burden on the system, or two, there's a nutrient deficiency, which may not be as glorious as a toxicity. In modern medicine, they don't really talk about either one. I focus more on the toxicity aspect because most doctors don't deal with the toxicity. They deal with the nutritional aspect that are doing our type of medicine. But really, it's part and parcel of one and the same, meaning that generally speaking, you don't see one and not the other. You see a component of both, of nutrient deficiency and toxicity on board. So if you can reduce the toxicity on board and improve the nutritional component, then all disease processes will start to improve. And this is one of the things, and we're talking about Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, all these gastrointestinal symptomologies that they kind of throw into the irritable bowel syndrome type picture, they're dealing with a primary detoxification organ. And so when your detox organ itself is impaired, it's going to affect everything else. And
well, think of really think of what it has to deal with on a, when it's healthy. Some nasty stuff, yeah. Right? But you've got the those organs of elimination are corrupted to this degree and inflamed. And the doctors act like they don't know what caused it. Maybe they don't. But certainly by stopping the inflammation, like with prednisone and antibiotics or whatever they do, the combination, then they lead to surgical intervention. They're doing nothing to address the original cause. All they're doing is managing the symptoms. And as you said, we call it in homeopathy, Herring's Law of Cure, right? From the bottom up, from the inside out. The repetitive or recurrence of the many ailments I suffered for 24 years when I started undoing it. And I started going through many of these symptoms. And I had flare-ups of things. And I had to, you know, understand that concept, which is what Stacy's asking about for her husband, is asking, am I going to have to do this because he's going through it again? It's like, yes, because you suppressed it. You didn't address the underlying cause. The body needs to let the stuff out, and then we begin to promote the healing of the tissue itself.
Well, that was very well said, Robert. And the thing is this. If you take an example, let's take a more minor type of issue. Somebody gets diarrhea. You go to the doctor gives you something to suppress the diarrhea. And if you're throwing up, if you get, let's say, food poisoning or you get the stomach flu, you know, you're usually throwing up and you usually got diarrhea and the doctors give you something, an antiemetic so you're not throwing up and an antidiarrheal so you're not having the loose stool. But what happens is a person ends up being sick for anywhere from 10 to, you know, 11 days. You know, sometimes they're better in 7-8 days, but usually it lasts over 10 days. Whereas if you just allow the gut to what was the physiological design that the ultimate engineer designed us to do? If you have something irritating, you're going to either throw it up or you're going to get rid of it the other end. Mm-hmm. So if you just allow that process to go through, the person's only sick for maybe 3 or 4 days, and then they don't need any more antidiarrheals and they don't need any more antiemetics. Now, the point that I'm making is to understand the physiology, the physiological aspect of what's going on and not impeding the physiological aspect. So when you give somebody steroids, you're suppressing the immune system. Now, they're doing it to reduce the inflammation, yes, but you're also suppressing the immune system, which causes a greater burden on the system. And some of these other drugs that are designed, you know, they reduce motility and they do all this other thing. They throw off the absorption aspect from the gastrointestinal system, from the colon, et cetera, et cetera. And as you said, none of these things actually help. And in fact, generally speaking, they worsen the situation because it's covering up the problem. So you're no longer aware of the situation, but the symptoms that were supposed to give you feedback are no longer giving you feedback, and the process continues without mm-hmm. any abatement whatsoever. So the point that I'd like to make here is that, remember in the last segment, we talked about the mesenteric plexus and the neurotransmitters and how the gut mm-hmm. is considered to be the second brain. I'm convinced that Crohn's disease, ulcerative colitis, all these things are directly associated with an emotional, psychological, the fifth toxicity aspect. And until you get that thing resolved, you're going to continue to have this issue. And I've experienced this with patients and actually personally when I was in medical school. So you have to deal with the emotional, psychological aspect in all diseases. It comes back to what I talked about during The Truth About Cancer, as a man thinketh. The body is a slave to the mind. If there's something wrong with the body, that means there's something wrong with the mind. And if you want to fix the body, you have to first fix the mind. Now, yeah, I know that many people would think, go ahead.
It's well said. And, you know, when we talk about some of these things, and I will, you know, say specifically, there's a physiological or physical issue that can be addressed with this remedy, for instance. But in reality, if you're taking on a patient, per se, you have to encompass much more than we could communicate normally. So what you're sharing here is quite profound, and I hope everybody's paying attention to it. Because when we talk about healing an ailment that's physical, there's a starting point, but that may only be the starting point if it comes back and you're doing everything you think is right and you haven't addressed what you call the emotional psychological component. I don't know who's going to help you get there, because the doctors themselves, we're often having to undo the damage they did to you before they come to, you know, someone like us.
Yeah, and I, you know, as much as I would like to take credit for this, this was something that was done way before you or I were even involved with this, Robert. I mean, this was mm-hmm. this is like in the 60s. Louise Hayes had some of her work that she had done, and you know, the more I learned about some of the things that she did, quite impressive. I mean, some of the work that she was involved with and what she furthered. And one of her books, I've actually just recently gotten a copy of it. I've read excerpts from it. But one of her books talks a lot about this entire aspect of the emotional connection with the disease processes. And what I'm trying to see if I can find this real quick with the association of what the gut, as far as Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. In fact, I've got it right here. But she basically associated various types of symptoms that people were having with the emotional underlying basis of what really was going on. And the name of the book is You Can Heal Your Life.
Right.
And I think it originally came out in the, I think it came out in the 70s. I'm not sure. Maybe it came out in the 80s. I don't remember. But very, very effective. Very effective at, as far as correlating certain symptomology with the emotional issues. And again, personally, you and I've talked about this off the air. Things that I experienced for the last mm-hmm. couple of years, even most recently in October, completely accurate. I just blew my mind that, I mean, I'd read some of this stuff before I knew about it, but I had no idea how accurate it is. And so I look at this sure. now very closely for patients because I want to know how can I deal with, again, going back to as a man thinking, you know, see some of this information, Robert, is old information. It really makes you think about that old adage that there's nothing new under the sun. It's just whether when we discover it or rediscover it again.
Yes.
Because these things were around before you and I.
Yeah,
you know, we were still running around in our diapers at that time. So, I would
folks, pay attention to this because in 2018, if you want to take a leap in consciousness and understanding and recognizing, you know, your purpose and you feel like you're held back by ailments, physical ailments. What Dr. Bitar is referencing here are things that could set you to that next level of freedom, ultimately spiritual freedom, I believe. But we talked earlier in the show this hour about that health being a part of that purpose. If it's not, there's no wealth in the world that can buy the health that you, only you, can co-create once you figure this out. We'll talk more about it on the break, those of you watching on YouTube, when we come back to wrap it up. We do have another question of the day that it might tie in as well to heavy metal toxicity raining from the sky. Possibly, yeah, we'll get there. Stick around, lots more with Dr. Bitar after this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Rocking the health world through the power of radio. It's the Robert Scott Bell Show.
All right, 2 hours a day, 6 days a week, and of course, 1 hour, a very special hour each and every week. We do advanced medicine with Dr. Rasha Bitar. You can find him at drbitar.com, also advancedmedicine.com. There are many places to link through. Just do a search or just come on over to robertscottbell.com. You'll see the links up. Super Don has placed them in the banners. You can go right to that and learn more. And in fact, listen to the many, many hours. Next week, we should be back to our regular advanced medicine schedule. We've delayed the last 2 weeks because of holidays. And Dr. Bitar, thanks for flexing with me on that. We've been talking a lot about the GI issues, the inflammation, and you've been picking out more of the emotional, psychological components, a lot of it coming back from Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life, and learning about the gut issues, the colitis issues, fascinating to see the emotional or deeper components of the actual, let's say, starting points, even though they are real physical maladies.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, while we were on break, I finally found the link. So Crohn's disease, according to Louise Hayes's book, Crohn's disease represents fear, worry, not feeling good enough. And then when you look at ulcerative colitis, which falls similarly in that category, that she doesn't have ulcerative colitis here, but she does have colitis, which is the generic form. Colitis mm-hmm. is basically inflammation of the gastrointestinal system or inflammation of the colon and the small bowel. Colitis is insecurity and represents the ease of letting go of that which is over. Now, I find this fascinating even more so than the question because when I was in medical school, I actually had a differential diagnosis of between Crohn's and ulcerative colitis because I was having many of those symptoms. And you know, this not feeling good enough, I can tell you that I had been used to getting very good grades in high school. And when I went to college, I went to Washington University, which was the second most difficult workload in mm-hmm. And if all universities, at least in those few years, they had the highest suicide rate. And in fact, Washington University had the highest suicide rate of all universities in the United States. In fact, all the high rises in the South 40, which was where the dorms were, have all been taken down since then because so many people committed suicide by jumping off the top floors, you know, 15 floors. And that's because it was directly associated with the workload. And so after coming through Washington University, I didn't feel so bad. Of course, I didn't have straight A's there, but I didn't feel bad because I felt I was, you know, in the most difficult, one of the most difficult universities in the country. And going on to medical school, and for there's a transition, I can tell you that there was a feeling of not feeling good enough. And I remember distinctly what happened, and I won't go into all the details, but I can tell you that it was a change in my mindset that allowed me to no longer have any of those symptoms. And now I've never even looked at that till this question today, and I've not looked that up. And sure enough, Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, all to do with insecurities, fear, worry, not being good enough. And that's exactly what I haven't even thought about that, because that was, you know, 30 years ago. So, again, this is, when I say it's fascinating, when you say it's fascinating, and it's truly fascinating, it's not just a word we're using, an adjective you're using to describe something. It really is fascinating because it's taking us back. You know, you went through this, Robert, I went through this. So look at these emotional aspects. And I'll jump to the other question that we try to cover, because I don't know how much time we have.
Yeah, a few minutes. We were talking briefly about Morgellons, the strange fibers, colored fibers coming out. You talked briefly about some patients that was associated with paranoia, delusions, hallucinations perhaps, but they all carried strange toxic burdens that were very real, and the manifestations were real, even if there's lacking adequate explanation for it in total.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of these people, the three that at least I treated, all had psychiatric evaluations done. Doctors had minimized their symptomology, and of course, the way they measure things, there's nothing wrong. You know, their CBC, their SMAC 20s, everything was totally normal. Their workup was normal. Our esoteric type testing, a little bit out of the box testing, we revealed certain things that were not balanced, that shouldn't have been there, that were obviously present and measurable and quite significant. And I personally think that these people, this diagnosis is actually associated with the hallucinations and psychiatric disorders and paranoia. And I personally think that these people are not paranoid, and they actually probably have had justifiable reasons for feeling what they have felt. Like one of my patients, I told you, had a government contract that she'd been working on, and it had fallen through, and then all this stuff happened to her. And I have no idea regarding whether or not this was associated with it. She was convinced it was. But I can tell you that she got better. It took us almost a year and a half. She actually moved from Virginia, for she worked in Washington D.C. She actually moved to Charlotte, and we treated her. And it took almost 2 years, got her straight. But there is some significance to this, and I don't think that it should be associated with paranoia, psychiatric issues. That there is a valid.
Sure. Well, it points out some inconvenient aspects of what's going on in our culture. Government-wise, corporate-wise, toxicological burdens, etc., that are very real. And we'll continue with advanced medicine, uncovering them and empowering you to bring, that healing that you want. And, with that, Dr. Bitar, tell them what they need to know, because we do have to go.
It's unequivocally yours.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.